Blog Talk Radio.
I am politically incorrect and damn proud of it. I love my country, but I'm scared to death of its government. You believe what you read because it's all that we give you. Because all the history is written by winners. I'm engaged in a frenzy of mass self-destruction. And I feed upon your famine to fuel my corruption. I'm wholesaling hatred and international incest to carnivorous hyenas in a global death fest. I've mastered the arts of death and foreign nation genocide. Those who turn on me commit national suicide.
Visions of the things to be, the pains that are within.
help for me. I realize and I can see that suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please. The game of life is hard to play. I'm gonna lose it anyway. The losing card I'll someday lay. So this is all I have to say.
America, welcome to the Constitution Hour. A little mood music to get you in the right frame of mind before you go out tomorrow and pull the lever, punch the card, or swipe your voter card and choose the lesser of two evils. Remember that suicide is painless. Welcome to the Constitution Hour, everybody. Of course, it is Monday night, and as everyone knows, tomorrow is the big day when we go out and participate in our nationwide opinion poll. And I have a caller on the line, Mr. Robert. How are you?
I'm sawing my oats, so to speak.
Well, hopefully the music puts you in the right frame of mind for casting your ballot tomorrow.
Absolutely. I'm just afraid I'll come home with... I just want to come home alive. That's what I'm worried about.
It was an interesting day in my world today. We had quite a few customers in, and I had a husband and wife team in their Obama shirts, support the union. And meanwhile, I had another customer on the telephone complaining to one of his friends about all the idiots that are going to vote this SOB back into office. I thought it was we were going to have a fist fight in the showroom there for a moment.
Wow. Well, time will tell.
I think time has told, hasn't it?
I can't vote for the guy. I couldn't vote for the guy.
Which
I
one?
I tried accepting the guy. Deep down, I wanted him to really, really, really succeed, Ron. I really wanted this guy to prove the Democrats wrong and everybody else wrong that, you know, he was going to be the man. But it turned out differently, in my view. I mean, I don't know what to say anymore. You know, I was just, we talked about this before a long time ago, and how we felt, how sick we were when we found out how stupid we were, that we were just nothing but, just, I hate to say it, indoctrinated communists.
Well, you know, if I could find it, and I'm not sure it's on this computer, maybe on my other computer. I understand how you feel. You know, back when Obama was elected, despite my own misgivings on the whole situation, I wrote a letter to Obama. And
you never told me that.
Yeah, wrote a letter to Obama, and you know, I wish I could find it. I know it's on my other computer. But I thought, you know, all things being equal, that this was a chance, an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to really step up to the plate and unite our country, our society, and call out the past administrations and the government, the status quo, for placing the chains of slavery on all of our society.
Yeah.
And, you know, he promised these fundamental changes, and I asked him if he was willing to take the high road and to do what's right by America and the American people and bring us back to following the written law, our Constitution. Of course.
Did you get a response?
Boy, did I ever get a response. I mean, look at the last 4 years. the proof is in the pudding. And, you know, the proof has been in the pudding for decades. We have such a short memory. How quickly we forget. I doubt if there's very many people listening to the sound of my voice right now that can tell me what was going on in Iran in 1953.
Well, I can't tell you that because I wasn't born yet.
Now, granted, we were also gearing up to go into the Korean conflict, which is appropriate, seeing as how the second lead-in song was the theme song to MASH, which was a show about a mobile army surgical hospital in Korea during the Korean War. In 1953, a guy named Kermit Roosevelt, and yes, he was nephew, cousin, kin to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Kermit Roosevelt was working with a government agency known as the Central Intelligence Agency. And Kermit and his team had undertaken the task of ousting the sitting ruler in Iran, what we would today call regime change. So, under the banner of the United States of America, Kermit Roosevelt and his team set about blowing up school buses. And I think we all know who rides on school buses. School children.
Right.
And distributing leaflets alleging Mossadegh, the then leader in Iran, as praising these atrocities, which, as you can well imagine, didn't sit well with the people in that society. They became rather pissed, and before long they ousted Mr. Mossadegh from power, ran him out of the country, and we got the Shah in his place. Now, we can fast forward to 1979 and the Iran hostage crisis. The vacuum that was left when the Shah ran out of town was filled quite nicely by the mullahs, the Ayatollahs. And how did the Ayatollahs manage to get a foothold in the country? It was because the Shah was a brutal SOB of a dictator. We were directly responsible for the Shah ascending to the throne, and the Iranian people knew it. And they did not like us because they were being oppressed by the Shah. Then in comes Ronald Reagan. Now, we've got to remember, just a few short years after Reagan took office, we stumbled into Iran-Contra scandal. Does anyone remember what the Iran-Contra scandal was? Do you remember what was going on with Iran-Contra?
That was didn't that have to do with Carter with the hostages?
Well, the Iran-Contra scandal, quite simply, was a Gunwalker scandal. We were running weapons to Iran, which was illegal, against our own laws, because we had sanctioned them. Why did we sanction them? Well, because they held our guys hostage, right?
Right.
Well, the Iran, guns for hostages was one. But we were selling weapons to Iran through the back door to the Contras. Then we were taking that money, and what were we doing with that money? We were using it to run weapons down to the Sandinistas.
For some reason,
Robert, we seem to think that Obama and his administration, they're the first ones to ever come up with such a horrendous policy as the Gunwalker scandal and what's going on in Libya.
But this has been going on before Woodrow Wilson on.
Well, I understand that, but that's really the point, isn't it?
Ron Paul brought it up again and again.
Oh, but he was laughed at. He was laughed at. He was crazy, loony. The crazy old Uncle Ron, you know?
No one listened to the guy. No one listened to why should we feed the hands who's going to bite our hands off?
Why in the hell should we bother with the truth when, you know, our alternate reality that we create for ourselves is so much more attractive?
You know what this government reminds me of? Do you remember the
Caligula?
Get Smart. That's what the government reminds me of. Get Smart. You ever watch that program? Where he goes down the elevator. that's what this country reminds me of. Is Get Smart. And they were just giving us hints all the way through the whole program. We were watching it as we were kids, and we were just too stupid to figure it out. God, am I right or wrong, Ron?
Oh yeah, I understand.
You know,
I mean, Rod asked in the chat room, or made the statement: there is a difference between drug killers and freedom fighters. We're not talking about the gun running in Mexico. I'm talking about Libya. Okay, we're not even talking about the Gunwalker deal. I've just named it Gunwalker because every one of these programs are government-run programs to supply weapons to some group. And I really don't think, personally for myself, it makes one scintilla of difference the justification that our government places on it. Whether it's freedom fighters, those freedom fighters, by the way, are the very same freedom fighters that we are currently fighting. So that brings me to a clip that I want to play for you tonight, because it absolutely addresses that exact point. And this is why we shouldn't be involved in any of this garbage at all, because we're not smart enough, we're not benevolent enough to make the distinction. That's why judgment is left to God and not to man. So without further ado, I want to play you this clip from 2009.
We also have a history of kind of moving in and out of Pakistan. I mean, let's remember here, the people we are fighting today, we funded 20 years ago. And we did it because we were locked in this struggle with the Soviet Union. They invaded Afghanistan, and we did not want to see them control Central Asia. And we went to work. And it was President Reagan, in partnership with the Congress, led by Democrats, who said, you know what, sounds like a pretty good idea. Let's deal with the ISI and the Pakistani military, and let's go recruit these Mujahideen, and let's get some to come from Saudi Arabia and other places, importing their Wahhabi brand of Islam, so that we can go beat the Soviet Union. And guess what? They retreated, they lost billions of dollars, and it led to the collapse of the Soviet Union. So there's a very strong argument, which is, wasn't a bad investment to end the Soviet Union, but let's be careful what we sow, because we will harvest. So we then left Pakistan. We said, okay, fine, you deal with the stingers that we've left all over your country. You deal with the mines that are along the border. And by the way, we don't want to have anything to do with you. In fact, we're sanctioning you. So we stopped dealing with the Pakistani military and with ISI, and we now are making up for a lot of lost time.
Okay, so that's from 2009, and unfortunately, Rod had to go catch the phone, because I wanted everyone to hear this clip from 2007, just in case you were under the mistaken impression that the Obama administration has got the corner on the market for bonehead moves.
A point in there about John Negroponte, who's now going to be the Deputy Secretary of State, as opposed to the head of U.S. intelligence, you write this: I was subsequently told by the two government consultants and the former senior intelligence official that the echoes of Iran-Contra were a factor in Negroponte's decision to resign from the National Intelligence Directorship and accept the position of Deputy Secretary of State. Explain what you were hearing, because that's obviously a very explosive charge.
Yes, it's probably the single most explosive, if you will, or depressing or distressing sort of thing I discovered in the last few months, which is simply this. This administration has made a policy change, a decision that they are going to put all the pressure they can on the Shiites. That is the Shiite regime in Iran, the Shiite, and they're also doing everything they can to stop Hezbollah, which is Shiite, the Hezbollah organization, from getting any control or any more of a political foothold in Lebanon. So they I saw Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, and he described it this way, as fitna, the Arab word for civil war. As far as he is concerned, we are interested in recreating what's happening in Iraq and Lebanon, that is Sunni versus Shia. And in looking into that story, and I saw him in December, I found this, that we have been pumping money, a great deal of money, without congressional authority, without any congressional oversight. Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia is putting up some of this money for covert operations in many areas of the Middle East, where we think that we want to stop the Shiite spread or the Shiite influence. They call it the Shiite Crescent. And a lot of this money, and I can't tell you with absolute assurance how exactly, when and how, but this money has gotten into the hands, among other places in Lebanon, into the hands of at least three jihadist groups. There's three Sunni jihadist groups whose main claim to fame inside Lebanon right now is that they are very tough. These are people who are connected to Al-Qaeda who want to take on Hezbollah. So this government, at the minimum, We may not directly be filing money to them, but we certainly know that these groups exist. My government, which arrests al-Qaeda every place it can find them and sends some of them are in Guantanamo and other places, is sitting back while the Lebanese government we support, the government of Prime Minister Senora, is providing arms and sustenance to...
Okay, so here's a guy talking in 2007 to Wolf Blitzer about George Bush and money being funneled out of Iraq and, of course, contributions from the Wahhabists, the Saudis, right? And we're involved in playing religiosity between the various segments of Islam. You have to have a screw loose, people, to be getting involved with this junk. You know, these guys have been doing a wonderful job of killing one another. They don't need our assistance. And then that leads us to, you know, our current debacle. And, you know, Hillary Clinton in that first clip, according to her own assessment, the problem wasn't that we were funding terrorists. The problem wasn't that we created al-Qaeda through the Mujahideen freedom fighters. The problem was that we stopped playing ball with them and we walked away when we got what we wanted, which was control of the Asian portion of the continent, right? I mean, it only makes sense. My God, we spent a lot of blood and treasure in Korea. We spent even more blood and treasure in Vietnam. And now, instead of expending our own lives, we allow the Mujahideen guys to do it for us in Afghanistan, right? Meanwhile, we're playing footsie with the Iranians, which, by the way, are locked in a heated battle with the other guy we put in power in Iraq, Saddam Hussein, who we've now overthrown. I mean, is any of this adding up to anyone that what in the hell is your government doing? Okay, so all that leads up to here's the culmination of things the way that Hillary believes it should be. Instead of walking away from our support for al-Qaeda and the terrorists, the jihadists, we're going to go ahead and support them. And here's evidence of that.
Around the world, they want to help the Libyan rebels. They want to help the opposition overthrow Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there could be al-Qaeda among them, we are learning.
Almost certainly there would be elements of al-Qaeda or individuals. You know,
How real is that?
Well, you can file it under sort of shades of gray. You know, there's nothing in Libya that's black and white right now, that's for sure.
The breaking news, just to reiterate, it is now clear that the United States is directly assisting the Libyan rebels in their battle against Muammar Gaddafi's forces. The extent of that assistance remains unclear.
The Obama administration is throwing its full weight behind the main rebel group fighting to overthrow Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced today that the U.S. is officially recognizing the Rebel Transitional National Council as Libya's legitimate government. Clinton made the announcement at an international conference on Libya in Istanbul, Turkey. And CNN's Mohammed Jamjoon joins us now from Istanbul. Mohammed, just how will this help the rebels, do you think?
Randy, that's the key question right now. It was a huge announcement that was made today by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, the fact that the U.S. is now for the first time recognizing the Libyan Transitional National Council as the official and legitimate governing body of Libya.
Okay, so now we recognize our State Department, Hildebeest Clinton, and the Obama administration officially recognize the rebels that would be the martyrs, the nut jobs in Libya as the official government. Now, fast forward to September 11th, 2012, how do we differentiate between the official rebels and the rebels that murdered our ambassador and some of our CIA members, ex-Navy SEALs? How do we differentiate between those people?
I have an answer for that because what did it take for us to get so long out of Vietnam, Iran? Because we didn't know who the hell we were fighting against. Period. We didn't know.
Look, you need, I mean, even with a damn scorecard, you can't keep track of who's who. But I can tell you one name that is at the top of that flipping scorecard, okay? There's one common denominator in all of these fiascos, and it's called the federal government.
You know, Rod, my dad's brother fought in the Philippines, in the Philippine War. And he used to tell me some gruesome stories about what happened to him. And, you know, he fought in the jungles. And when he was in the jungle sleeping, they would all be sleeping in a line, you know, side by side with each other. And one guy in the middle will wake up and find one guy with a knife stabbed in the heart, and the other guy stabbed the heart at the same time. That's a gruesome story.
It is, but you have to, and you know, I'm not trying to diminish the people that have lost their lives in service to the country, but you have to ask yourself, do you expect any less?
No.
Because where are they at? They're in the Philippines. They're not in, you know, Kansas or Missouri or Georgia or Florida. They're in a foreign country. Who invited them?
Ron Paul's right. Ron Paul goes, why are we funding people that we don't know?
I wish I had had more time to put together the clips, because I posted in the chat room a YouTube video link to a guy who's an ex-CIA agent. His name's Michael Schur. He was the head of the Bin Laden group. He knows what the hell he's talking about. He was in the agency. He was involved in intelligence gathering. And he says, point blank, Al-Qaeda doesn't exist. We created it. We're chasing our asses all over the continent of the Middle East, fighting a ghost that we created.
We should be fighting amongst ourselves, because I tell you why.
I saw
Jesse Ventura they have program fighters now. Have you ever heard of these program fighters? They go through an MRI, you know, type of thing, and they control their minds to kill. Any one of us in the country. Can you imagine that? They can program a guy to kill in this country. The CIA, our own CIA. Can literally progress you and I to go kill somebody.
The reason I wanted to do this show tonight and touch on these subjects, because I talked about it last night as well. When we look at the fanfare, the hoopla, the kabuki theater surrounding the current election, right? And for the next 3 months after the election, we're going to hear about should've, could've, would've, what's coming next, what does this mean for the country, et cetera, ad nauseum. And when are the American people going to wake up and recognize the truth, okay? I mean, I'm not here, I'm sorry, I'm not here to be, let's bash America. I love my country. I love what my country is supposed to be, what it's supposed to stand for.
Freedom.
But it hasn't done that. We've not lived up to our mandate. We've not lived up to the mandate of our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. We've been too damned busy traipsing around the world trying to shove our brand of corporatism down everyone's tailpipe.
Well, it's just like last night, Linda asked me, did they even give you an example how to vote for the amendments? You know, when I finally received it? Today.
Well, yes, she was asking if they divulge who's sponsoring the amendments.
Yeah, well, the Republican Party of Sarasota County is the sponsoring of how to tell us how to vote for these amendments. They're telling us how to vote for the amendments. Don't figure, huh? We can't make up our own minds and say how to vote. They're telling us how to vote for the amendments.
Well, obviously. But, you know, more to the point, Robert and Linda put in the chat, we have not lived up to the standard as intended. I agree. But when did it become unpatriotic? When did it become blame America first for pointing out the obvious, for pointing out our failures, not just here at home, but abroad? I mean, there is a cause and effect out there, and we can't just simply ignore it and keep lining up at the welfare office and hoping tomorrow's going to be a bright, sunshiny day.
Look, when I was too young, I was 4 years old when Kennedy got elected. I was too young to remember Eisenhower, so I went through Kennedy, I went through Johnson, and I went through Nixon, and I went through Jimmy Carter. I went through George Senior. Then I went through Bill Clinton. Then I went through George Bush. Then I went through Obama. So did I nail those correctly?
Well, yeah, and you know, I don't know about yourself, but I'm much like Joe, our caller last night. You know, I went through most of my life not really paying a whole hell of a lot of attention to politics. You know, because I was certain of one thing, that politicians are liars, and we expect them to be liars. And, you know, we just try to fly under the radar and live our own life, and the politicians are going to do whatever the hell they want to do, and you can't fight City Hall and all of that good nonsense.
But
at some point
thing.
I woke up, you know, because I've known, Robert, I've honestly known since I was a young man, at least since I became a teenager, that something wasn't right. You know, despite everything I've been told and history and social studies and the news and everything, it wasn't right. Something wasn't right with the way things are, with the way things are run.
I knew it wasn't right either, and I know why my father raised me to be conservative. He raised me to be conservative. I know why he raised me to be conservative. Because my brother and sister are nothing but liberals.
Because he wanted you to grow up being an enigma.
You know? He knew I was right on the matters. He knew I was right.
I put up a link
I said, Dad, I always used to argue with him. I said, I used to fight with my father all the time of politics. I said, you make me budget. You make me not spend. Why can't our government do the same? I would ask him, but he'd just start laughing. I said, but you make me do it. And now I know why he made me do it, because I survived every recession of my lifetime. I know why he made me do it.
When I
have survived every recession in my life. I didn't go under, Ron. I know what to bring in. I know what to spend. I know what to do. I know how to budget my household. And I know how to take care of my house. I mean, if we can do it, why can't they? Period. I've been preaching this on this show since I've been on.
Well, you know as well as I do, and we've talked about that before, people don't want responsibility. That's why do we have government? I mean, let's really get down to brass tacks. Why does government exist at all? The same reason, the reason is the exact same. We don't want to be responsible. We want someone else to blame when things go wrong. That's the whole reason we have government.
The only thing we have to blame is ourselves, because we elected you, you know what, so that's the bottom line.
Well, sure.
I mean,
take, if if it were possible, if it were possible today in this millennium that we could discover a hitherto unknown continent that was totally uninhabited, let three people move to that continent, build a home, and I promise you, within a year, you'll have a government. Probably within 6 months, you will have a government. Why? Because there's more than two human beings there. It's inevitable that a conflict will result. There's going to be a confrontation. And they're going to look to a third party to resolve the dispute. Because no one wants to take responsibility for themselves. They want someone else to be the bad guy. Right?
All right.
And voila, we have a government. And now that the government is providing a service, you're going to have to pay to run the government. You're going to have to pay some money. Now that you're paying money, you're going to expect the government to give you more of a return for your investment. So you're going to start complaining when, you know, the water well runs dry on your new spread, and you're going to want the government to do something about it. And of course, the government, they're more than willing to help you out. After all, you paid for it. So they're gonna commission a study to find out where in the hell all the water went.
Oh, water in Florida is going to run dry pretty soon. It's only a matter of time when I run out of water.
I mean, it truly is insanity.
It is. I mean, I have paid $100 a month now for my water bill, Ron. $100 a month. It's unbelievable. You know, when I first moved in my house in 2002, my water bill was $65. Now it's increased to $100. My power bill this month was $230 with my new air conditioning and my new ducts. Has it changed? That's what the cap and trade is already in fruition. Already.
Well, at least Mitt Romney. Oh no, I was going to say at least Romney will save you from the cap and trade, but I forgot he's actually in favor of that.
Oh yeah. Well,
at least this week. He may be against it right now.
Well, Ryan voted for the sequestration law too. That's why that's why I don't even want to vote. when I heard that Ryan was in favor of sequestration, I knew.
Well, you could still vote. You could just simply go vote for Gary Johnson and say, the hell with you guys. I'm done with you.
I mean, I don't even want to vote for Vern Buchanan, my congressman. Nor Connie Mack, because he's got road rage and personality problems, just like me.
Well, again, this is why I played the song earlier, you know, and the at the opening of the show, Goodbye America.
My mother was, you know, I told you about my mother. She was General Patton's right hand nurse during the Battle of the Bulge. And she told me.
I'm sorry, I mean, that just sounds.
She was just like that. She was like Margaret Holohan. Sure, you know.
I understand, and I mean no disrespect to you or your mother, but something about being a right hand nurse during the Battle of the Bulge and talking about politics. Just, I mean, you know, after Willie Clinton, how can your mind, your thoughts not go there?
because you got a dirty mind.
Well, I have been accused of that before as well.
I'm only teasing. But, you know, you have to have a sit down. You have to have a sense of humor about this. Now you really got to just go deep down. Just go deep down with your gut feeling. you know, if you vote, what I worry about, if I do vote for Gary Johnson, will really lead him to vote towards Obama.
No, it won't. That's been established. And, you know, that's the thing that pisses me off about this whole process. Everyone feels like, well, gee, if I don't vote for the front runner guy of the opposite party, then the bad guy I don't want is going to get in. But your heart's not really with the other guy. I mean, for God's sakes, if Americans would just grow a pair and they recognize in large numbers, they recognize that the lesser of two evils is still evil. And, you know, they make all these excuses and justifications. Oh, there's no such thing as a perfect candidate, yada, yada. Well, that depends. If your idea of a perfect candidate is a guy that will tell you everything you want to hear, then you're right. There is no perfect candidate, because between Obama and Romney and John McCain and, you know, Al Gore and the rest of them, they can't keep up lying at that pace. But if you want someone who's going to tell you the truth and someone who's not going to blow smoke up your skirt and tell you that the brush is on fire, then we did have a perfect candidate. And that was Ron Paul. Twice he's run in the last two election cycles, and twice the American people have flatly rejected the truth in favor of the lesser of two evils. They want their ears tickled. They want to be told everything's going to be okay. You've got half the country cheerleading Romney, thinking that the Republicans are going to destroy government spending on handout programs. You've got the other half of the country cheering for Obama, believing that if the Republicans get in, their free ride on the gravy train is coming to an end. Right? And no one's addressing the fact that the damn gravy train shouldn't even exist in the first place. And on that note, I've got Miss Linda on the line from California. Miss Linda, how are you?
I'm fine, sir. Thanks. Hi, Ron. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Linda.
You know, I don't know if you got a chance to see that short with Dinesh D'Souza that I had sent you. He explained it pretty well. I loved it. I was just applauding while he was speaking. You know, with the Obama on the horse and the gun and taking from Peter to pay Paul, it's a great analogy, because I believe Milton Friedman and the rest of them, like von Mises, would have explained it the same way in simple terms. The gravy train, I mean, let's look what FDR did. This guy was the champion of the Second Bill of Rights. You have a right to a job, a house, an ad nauseum. This goes back a long time. So... We can point fingers at all these clowns, man.
And I think we should not delude ourselves or confuse ourselves with calling them rights. They are exactly what they are called, civil liberties. And we need only go back a little bit in our history to find where we have the rise of civil liberties, civil rights, under a government. A civil right, is a privilege that's granted to citizens by its benevolent government.
Which can be taken away by them as well, and that's not good.
Thank you. And do you happen to recall when we had our first civil rights bill pass Congress?
No, I don't.
How about 1867?
Oh, you mean with the Emancipation?
With the Reconstruction Acts at the end of the Civil War. Our very first Civil Rights Act was in 1867. In fact, the Republican Congress was so PO'd at President Jackson at the time that they fought to impeach him because he vetoed the damn thing. He had the audacity to veto an unconstitutional bill.
Wow.
And the bleeding hearts of the day were Republicans. And they really just wanted to grant all the rights of slavery to the freed slaves. I mean, of citizenship to the freed slaves.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, both sides. It's very bad. I mean, and then of course we get so much bad or misinformation and revisionist history from both sides. It's
precisely.
Quite,
that's why I chose that song that I played, and I know I understand the lyrics. It's kind of tough to get a grasp on what the guy is singing about. But that's precisely what he was singing about, was goodbye, America. I control declining nations.
Mm-hmm.
You have squandered freedom and wasted your heroes.
Oh, it's true. It is. It's pathetic. Yeah, it's really, really sad. Well, I guess the big question, of course, is, you know, where do we go from here? I mean, that's, of course, on everybody's mind. I mean.
Well, I can tell you, I hate to be a repeat guy. I hate to be redundant, but you know me. I like beating a dead horse, and I sometimes can't help myself. So I'm going to give you my interpretation of where we go from here, all right? And I'll be right back. This will only take about a minute and 23 seconds, but this is what I see the future of the United States of America right here. The reservation.
Wow.
I mean, that's truly how I feel about this country and what has happened to it over the years, the decades,
mm-hmm.
and where we're at right now. And not just because we're coming up on this election, because I honestly believe that the outcome of this election is pretty much pointless.
Yeah, it's not going to be a fun time for any of us. I'll agree with you there. some of us are not going to be able to figure out whether to blank or go blind. I mean, it's, you know, not going to be fun.
No, Sean.
It's not fun now.
I haven't enjoyed these past 4 years. I mean, I accomplished a lot in 4 years, you know, but, you know, I suffered in the meantime. I mean, I was struggling, you know, but I survived it. And,
well, you know,
if it
were just a matter of struggling and, you know, discomfort, man, I'm good with that. But I think it goes so much. I think it goes so much deeper than that, Robert.
Oh, yeah.
I think you recognize that as well.
I believe that there's, you know, maybe we need to find our niches, but if we found our niches and found our passion, we could live comfortably with our passion and don't need the government to support us. or anybody else for that matter.
Well, you know, that's the problem. That's the problem with government as it exists today. It's just like I was talking last night about conspiracy theory. It doesn't matter if you believe in these conspiracy theories that are out there or not. The people that are in the midst of them, they believe them. They believe them with all their heart, mind, and soul. And your participation is not required. And just in the same venue, government, they don't care if you need them or not. You're going to have the government they want to give you, regardless of what your desires are.
I know. I mean, and I just feel wrong that the people that I was surrounded by are just negative mosquitoes that want to bring you down. And
well,
I'll
definitely qualify as being negative, but I'm just trying to be pragmatic and look at the situation.
But in order to be, my philosophy is, if you don't want to be brought down anymore, you hang yourself around positive people and who believe in your ideologies and try to strive to be the best you could be till you leave the pearly gates, to go to the pearly gates. I mean, you know.
Well, and that's kind of what that song, Suicide is Painless.
Come on, Ron.
No, it is. I mean, I don't know if you understand the lyrics or if you know the lyrics to the song, but that's what the guy's talking about.
I don't want to die yet.
Well,
I don't want to go.
I understand that, but what he's saying is, look, you know, if it's just too much for you to bear, suicide's painless. You can crash out anytime you want, you know, that's your choice. But in the meantime, you know, recognize that it is what it is. It's life.
Like my pops
used to tell me, none of us get out of this alive.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Robert. You know, I'm pretty fortunate, even though I live in the libtard land of California, I have tons and tons of people who think like I do, who read much of what I read, people have been, you know, trying to educate themselves on Agenda 21, whatever. I look at my little groups, and we're very positive. We try to keep positive because we're doing something we believe in, just like they did in the Revolutionary War. So if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go down fighting, honey, and that's fine.
Oh.
But I'm going to stay positive, and I'm going to be Paul Revere, and that's it. In fact, I'm going to be Linda Lafayette, who I'm going to be.
but you know, Linda, God forbid, you know, if I go out to the polls tomorrow and some guy is going to go ballistic on me because I didn't vote for Obama and kills me, then I die for my freedom.
They won't go near you. I swear. The tennis shoes and the towel, they will not go near you.
But you know what I'm saying? If I die tomorrow, if I die after I voted, I got killed. You know, well, I got killed for a reason. I voted for my freedom.
That's how I feel. I think there is one more piece of attire that we could get Robert for his ensemble. Before he heads out to the voting booth. Okay, so we've got the yarmulke, we've got the tennis shoes and the towel. I think he needs an Ahmadinejad t-shirt. And then for certain, you know.
They won't go near you.
It did go well.
Absolutely. We've got another caller on the line, 906. Welcome aboard.
Hey, Mr.
Good
Matthew.
Evening, everyone. Hope we are all doing well.
We are.
Hey, Michael Magic.
How are you, Mr. Magic?
Not too bad. I don't know if I missed it or whatever here. I'm having some problems on this end. Anyway, did you ever say what the meaning of the words were to suicide is painless?
No, I did not. I didn't read the lyrics aloud. Did you care to expound for us?
No, I was just wondering what, you know, you were, how you were looking at it, is all.
Well, I think, you know, looking at it as, you know, from what I read of the lyrics going by as the song was playing, is the guy's basically saying, you know, he recognized that sooner or later he's going to play his last card. Sooner or later he's going to die. And here he is caught up in life. And you know what? If it just gets too unbearable, you can always kill yourself early and get out. You know, fold your cards and walk away from the table.
Well, I hope I didn't interrupt you in the middle of your explanation.
No, not at all. Not at all.
You know, I would, you know, like to remind everybody out there that, you know, committing suicide goes against, directly against God's word and how you should live your life.
Oh, I agree.
The best possible way you can.
The reason that I was playing that particular song is for mood music, to get everyone in the mood as they prepare to go out and vote tomorrow. Because from where I sit, we are committing suicide either way.
There we go. Yeah. There's the answer I was looking for right there, Ron.
Okay.
That was your opinion. Yeah. That was your opinion on, you know, what you, you know, wanted that song to say to, you know, the listeners out there.
Had you been listening? Go ahead.
I listened to a little bit of your show last night, about a half hour's worth, I guess, before I had to run off. And I remember hearing something about, if you don't stand up for something, then you will fall for anything.
Yep.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, I'd like to give you my interpretation of that, okay? Which is, you know, I am not going to stand up and vote for a president. I'm not going to do a write-in, okay? I am going to stand up for non-conformity to the two-party system of American politics, period.
Thank
so by me not standing up, I am standing up for something.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I think if you had listened to the entire program last night and the entire program tonight, there's no way you could walk away from these two programs back-to-back without having that overwhelming sense. Or at least the sense that, you know what, to hell with all of this junk, I'm voting for Gary Johnson, okay? If you absolutely feel that you just have to do your patriotic, slavish duty and vote, then at least, by God, stand on principle and vote for someone who's a man of principle and not one of these two windbags that have been selected for you.
Yep.
I look at that, Ron, you know, the voting for Gary Johnson thing, okay? He needs to get 5% of the vote to get $5 million in backing federal funds for another run at the presidential campaign in the future, you know, should he not win this year, okay? And I personally, you know, think it's better to vote for nobody than it is to vote for Gary Johnson because, like I said, I feel that my vote towards nonconformity of, you know, the nature, the corrupt and illness of our sick, sick government, to show these people that I'm not standing up for it. I'm only going to vote for somebody who, you know, has a minimal chance, no matter how right, you know, Gary Johnson may be, okay? It's still, I feel I'm better showing them that I'm not going to put up with this crap and I'm not going to vote. And if enough people did that, maybe they would look at themselves a little better and figure it out or something. I don't know.
Well, I agree with you, and I think you and I are on the same page there. My philosophy is, I'm sorry, but I'm just not going to participate. Because by my participation alone, I'm lending my consent to the outcome of whatever little charade is going to be. And I don't have any delusions whatsoever that my little protest vote for Gary Johnson, Ron Paul, or anybody else is going to sway the minds of the Electoral College. And
right.
I'm not so certain, you know, all these political pundits out there, they're all giddy that Romney's going to win in a landslide. I don't know. It'd be gut check time, because what I'm reading on Electoral College, on polling the Electoral College, is Obama is a shoe-in.
No, that's very possible. I'm going to just kick back here and listen for a while, Ron, and let Linda jump back in here, because I love listening to what she has to say. Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, thank you.
And I just want to interrupt for just a second. I don't know if you heard my final parting shot of playing the ceremony of taps at Arlington. That's where I believe we're headed.
Yeah, I did hear that. You know, in my opinion, it doesn't matter, you know, as well as yours, obviously, you know, who gets in there. You know, it's the end of the night. You know, I finally figured out, just 1 minute, Linda, okay? I finally figured out, you know, I always talk about this picture puzzle. I finally figured out what the picture puzzle is. And it's a Monopoly board. It's a Monopoly board. The picture
yep.
is a Monopoly board. And you know what? Who wins at Monopoly? If one person
the
gets everybody's money, okay, what do they have when they're all done? They got nobody to pay them rent. All they have is a power trip.
Right. And where does all the money originate when you open the box, right? All the money's in the bank.
Oh, yeah.
And if you read the rules of Monopoly, it actually says if the bank runs out of money, you are allowed to go on a blank piece of paper and write your own amount of funds. You know, it's like...
It's like the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, Ben Bernanke is like, you know, he must have been like the co-founder years ago of Monopoly, the inventor or something there.
Well, you know, it's no mistake that the little guy that symbolizes Monopoly, right,
mm-hmm.
with the top hat and the tails and the little monocle, you know who that is?
Warburg?
J.P. Morgan.
Oh, Morgan.
Oh, J.P. Morgan Group.
Yes, sir.
I would have guessed Warburg.
Morgan was the inspiration for the game Monopoly.
Oh, my God.
So there you have it.
Oh, my God.
it's a round robin, Michael.
It's a double elimination tournament, and we're losing.
It's a double whammy.
We're down 6-1.
I don't know what to do tomorrow. I swear to God, I guess I should wear my towel like you said, Ron.
Get some knee pads, my brother.
Now that I have my Van Dyke, I should pose as a rabbi, but never really helped out. Wear my grandfather's rabbi hat.
Well. I know this next clip has been done to death, and I don't want to cut Miss Linda out of her time, but
that's okay.
I have got to play this, because he says it so plainly. And if we take out the what ifs, if we just read between the lines, the best summation I've heard of our situation ever.
The other day I had a piece in the Wall Street Journal about whether or not the Congress could, under the Constitution, regulate health care. Obviously, it can't. Healthcare is not mentioned in the Constitution. The framers had doctors. The framers had hospitals. The framers got sick. The framers needed health care. It was beyond their wildest imaginings that they would be creating a government that would somehow be able to regulate this kind of human behavior. But they did give the Congress a very unique power called the power to regulate interstate commerce. Madison argued that to regulate means, and this is what it meant at the time, if you have an Oxford English Dictionary, which gives you the history of the meaning of words throughout history, to regulate meant to keep regular. It meant to make sure that there is commerce between the states, not to allow the Congress to regulate everything under the sun, like the conditions of employment or the hourly wages or the materials used to make up the article that moves in interstate commerce, but just to make sure that interstate commerce is regular, to prevent, for example, the state of Pennsylvania from saying to merchants in New Jersey, you can't sell your goods here, only local merchants in Pennsylvania can sell them. That's what the Commerce Clause was written for. But Congress, of course, has used it to regulate the air that you breathe and the water that you drink and the force of the shower in your home and the size of your toilet bowl and the number of legs on your desk chair and on and on and on. Do you know that the Congress has used the Interstate Commerce Clause to make it a crime for you to speak the truth? If an FBI agent shows up at your house with a self-written search warrant, the agent will tell you, you may not tell anyone about this. You may not tell your spouse in the bedroom. You may not tell a priest in the confessional. You may not tell your lawyer in her or his office. You may not tell anyone in whom you confide. You can't even answer truthfully in a courtroom under oath whether or not you received one of these warrants without violating the Patriot Act. Well, in Bridgeport, Connecticut, two FBI agents showed up and delivered one of these handwritten search warrants to an 86-year-old librarian. She looked at them and said, "Who the hell are you and what the hell is this?" And she handed it to her 76-year-old assistant, whereupon they were arrested because she revealed to another human being that the FBI had come calling. They were indicted and they were tried. And your federal government attempted to put an 86-year-old librarian and her 76-year-old assistant in a federal prison for 5 years because they told people that federal agents came calling with a self-written search warrant. Do you really think you have the power to do that under the Constitution? Now, the words that I just articulated are not mine. They're the words of the very courageous federal judge to whom, fortunately for the defendants and unfortunately for the government, this case was assigned. Because after the jury was impaneled, the government decided to withdraw the charges. They somehow thought that they would lose the case. The judge was about to declare the Patriot Act unconstitutional. Now, you see how insidious the government is. If there's no case in front of a judge, then the judge loses the power to declare the law on which the case is based unconstitutional. So fearing that this courageous federal judge in Bridgeport, Connecticut, would declare the law unconstitutional, not caring what it did to the life of the 86-year-old or the 76-year-old, not concerned with its oath to uphold the Constitution, it simply withdrew the case and went about serving self-written search warrants and telling people, if you tell anyone about it, we'll come after you because you spoke the truth. So the same government now wants to use the same powers under the Constitution to regulate health care. Let's see. Medicare, broke. Social Security, broke. Medicaid, broke. Amtrak, broke. The post office, broke. Who in their right mind with that track record would give health care to the same people that have broken everything they've tried to manage?
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is exactly what you will be voting for tomorrow as you go out to participate in the mass delusion. Because both candidates for the office have espoused through their mouths and their actions their support for the USA Patriot Act, the NDAA, and continued government violation of your Constitution.
Yeah, the judge is amazing. He's probably the best.
I think I agree. I think he is.
Hey, Ron.
Which is why he's no longer on Fox. Yes, Robert.
Did Gary Johnson vote for the Patriot Act?
Gary Johnson? He did not. Gary Johnson was governor of New Mexico. He was not a senator or congressman. But he has also said, without any qualification whatsoever, he would absolutely not vote in favor of the Patriot Act or the NDAA, and if either of those bills were to cross his desk, he would veto them without question.
Cool.
At least the man has principle. The right principles. But as you said, none of that matters in tomorrow's theater, in
theater,
tomorrow's
yeah.
public opinion poll.
Yeah. I mean.
So, Ron, what is driving these electoral voters? That's what I want to know.
Insanity.
Well,
delusion.
I mean, true.
I don't know. The couple I talked about earlier that came into my store today. You know, Obama 2012 all over their vehicles, both vehicles, and they're both wearing the T-shirts and everything. And of course, they're a customer, so I can't even approach the subject with them.
Right.
Especially since I am absolutely opposed to what they apparently stand for. But I got the overwhelming sense from talking to the lady, who she did all the talking. Quite honestly, she was very pragmatic. She had a lot of common sense. And I really got the impression that if it were not for the fact that her husband worked for a union, they wouldn't be supporting Obama.
Oh, my God.
But I think people get so disillusioned. They get such blinders on, get tunnel vision, I guess, that, you know, that one little pet issue, that's their whole world. The fact that her husband works for a union and gets paid far more than he's probably qualified to earn as far as benefits and hourly wage. And I can't say that as an absolute, but more often times than not, that's certainly the case. It's another form of welfare.
Yeah, it is.
And it diminishes the rest of the country because we pay for it. Let's face it. We pay for it in increased consumer prices, inflated costs. And guess what? It drives up healthcare costs as well. All these quote unquote Cadillac plans. And, you know, I put a link in the chat room and I put it up there again. I don't know if you had a chance to see it. That link is a YouTube video of a discussion of how the Nixon administration met the goals of the original Earth Day demonstrations of 1970.
I have it saved later because I know it's lengthy, and I will definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's almost 2 hours long, and it's, you know, Richard Nixon and the rise of the environment. So when we talk about Agenda 21 and the Rio Summit in 1992, okay, well, let's preempt that. Let's go back to 1970.
Sure.
Hey, Ron.
Yes, Mr. Michael.
Gary Johnson, is he from South Dakota?
New Mexico.
New Mexico. Okay.
He was governor of New Mexico. He actually balanced their budget. He vetoed more bills than any governor before him. And if I'm not mistaken, he vetoed more bills than all the other governors preceding him combined.
Okay, I've got to run because I'm here and I got to go talk to this lady real quick because tomorrow's a big day for us. Thanks
God
so
bless,
much.
Hon.
You guys have fun. God bless.
We'll see you tomorrow night, Linda. Be safe.
Well, not tomorrow. It'll have to be Wednesday. So, yeah. Talk to you later, guys. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
And you know, Michael, it's not that I think that Gary Johnson is the perfect candidate. But at least he's honest.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to find anyone that's going to be, you know, absolutely 100% perfect. I mean, we're all human beings, obviously. And, you know, as you know, Ron, you know, many, many people are forced in government. They are forced to vote, you know, the way that their party is going to vote or...
Well, of course. I mean, we've seen the absolute epitome of that in this election cycle.
Absolutely.
You know, I made that comparison last night. You look back to the 2008 campaign, and when the American people were presented with a choice, well, let me rephrase that. When the GOP presented the GOP voters with a choice between Mitt Romney and John McCain, they chose John McCain. And they didn't like him. So the question becomes, what is it about Mitt Romney that's made him so much more attractive this time than last time? He's still the same guy. Still has all the same policies. And he gave you a sneak preview of how he'll run his administration at the GOP National Convention. By hook or by crook, by any means necessary, the ends justifies the means. But one thing he did do, one thing he has done, that has many of the neocon GOPers all excited, is he wants to increase defense spending. He wants to increase the military because, after all, there's still make-believe paper tiger boogeymen out there that we haven't slayed yet.
I have a question for you, Ron.
Yes, Robert.
Now, I just heard, I don't know if Terry went over this or not in on our show, but how does one nationalize education and training? That's what Obama wants to do.
We've already nationalized education.
But he wants to nip it in the bud. He wants to put the kibosh on the whole damn thing.
Look, we've got right here in the state of Georgia an amendment for charter schools. And you know who the biggest opponent to that amendment is? The Tea Party.
Tea Party.
Because they're disillusioned, because they think that it's going to give the state government all this power in education. It actually is designed to remove much of the federal government's influence. And the real movement against the charter amendment and the charter schools is the teachers' unions.
No,
and the reason, you know, why they're against it? Because
why?
the charter schools that we already have in the state are showing amazingly positive results on less money per student than the public schools.
Right.
That makes the public schools look bad. We can't have that. Because that might expose the whole damn system for the scam that it truly is. Education is not the main concern. Maintaining the union gravy train is.
That's the question. The problem is
exactly.
The unions and collective bargaining are controlling a normal person's life.
The problem that we all suffer from in this country is that we don't have the time, if we're working class Americans, we don't have the time to go fight every day for our rights. And we don't have the ability to expend the vast amounts of revenue that the unions and the corporations can to regulate us as exactly what they see us for, human resources. And with that, gentlemen, I am going to play us a song on the way out. And I thank you guys for tuning in. And Michael, God bless you. I'm standing with you tomorrow. I will not participate. I will not consent. And even though we refuse to consent, we are still in the same position, in the same boat with all the other 300 plus million Americans out there. And that's why I'm playing this song on the way out.